Next up, 1343.
Results of financial audit of the City Comprehensive Annual Financial Report for fiscal year 2016-17 and related communications.
Madam Auditor, good afternoon.
Mayor and Commissioners, I am City Auditor Mary Jo Caballero, and it is my pleasure today to introduce Jim Lanzarotta and Fiona Howell Earl. Mr. Lanzarotta is a partner in the accounting firm Moss Adams, which audited the city's fiscal 2017 financial statements. Ms. Hal Earl is a principal management auditor in my office, and she oversees the city's accounting contract and acts as the liaison between Moss Adams and city bureaus. These statements are important resources for community members, taxpayers, investors, and decision makers to understand what fiscal shape the city is in at a moment in time. Once management has prepared the financial statements, federal and Oregon law and city charter require an independent audit be conducted to determine if the public can reasonably be assured that they fairly represent the financial position of the city. It's important to note what financial audits don't do. They do not provide opinions on whether the city is spending appropriately, making good decisions, or what the long-term future may hold. We have to rely on other types of assessments to determine the answers to those questions. So Jim is going to present the audit results now, and Fiona is also available to answer any questions that you have.
Mayor Wheeler, fellow council members, thanks for the opportunity to come before you and present the results. Hard to follow that. I'm kind of reminded of a few years ago presenting to Metro. We do Metro's audit as well. And I followed a group of about six fifth grade girls who had just completed an amazing science project to deal with a problem in our landfill, styrofoam. They had come up with a solution that ate styrofoam so that it wouldn't land or stay in our landfills. And I had to follow that. And these fifth grade girls were eloquent and did an amazing job. And then I follow up with the audit results. I kind of feel that way a little bit, Ken, after following this discussion of a long and storied career for a pre-recognized finance professional across the nation, not just in Portland, Oregon. But anyway, I'll do the best I can. So obviously, we performed an audit for the city, and I would say our audit could probably be broken down into about six phases for you. So the first phase, I think you have a pretty good understanding. An audit is that independent verification of the numbers that appear in these financial statements. How accurate is this? And does this contain all of the footnote disclosures and bells and whistles that are required by the Governmental Accounting Standards Board that Ken mentioned? So that's looking at source documents. That's talking directly with your bankers and folk custodians of public of your cash and investments. It's talking with your legal counsel and obviously looking at things that verify these numbers. A second phase, though, which may not be quite as evident, is that obviously it requires a lot of what we call internal controls. What are those checks and balances that management uses to ensure that they can put this document together accurately? We have an obligation to evaluate those. Are they properly designed? And in fact, is management following those internal controls? So a second phase is doing that evaluation and then telling you if there are weaknesses. Are there things you need to be worried about in terms of their ability to get this right? A third phase, since you're an Oregon Municipal Corporation, you're required to follow a number of state laws, and I'm required to do testing of a few of those. There's about six or seven specific areas and two that we spend the most time. One is how well you administer the budget. So the public process to which you put your budget through, the changes to that budget after it's adopted, and so forth is a big emphasis for us to determine how well you've done that. A second area is public purchasing. You know, that's a very transparent process, and you've got a whole department dedicated to procurement. A number of state laws there, we test that. And there's a number of other areas. So testing your compliance with certain state laws. A fourth area is in testing your compliance with federal grants. So as you know, you're very fortunate. You've got a number of folks here that write grants that help fund the various services that you provide. we have an obligation to do testing of those grant programs and make sure that, in fact, you are complying with the applicable requirements to those. A fifth phase is really you have the staff, as Ken mentioned, and sought some recognition for the team of individuals here. You've got the people that put this document together. A lot of my brethren out there have to actually prepare this document in addition to auditing it. So we have the luxury of not preparing it in your case, thank goodness. So our role is to do that technical review. Does this match what we audited? And in fact, is it meeting all those bells and whistles? And does it meet those additional requirements of that certificate of excellence that Michelle mentioned, 36 years? 36 years in a row, that's pretty impressive. And then finally, a sixth phase is what I would just call reporting. So we do all this work, and we have an obligation to report to you the results. So you're helping me meet that kind of that final phase. All right, let's get to it. Actually, you've already heard the results, so this is rather anticlimactic. So on page 13 of this, you'll find our opinion. And in technical terms, we call it an unmodified opinion. So basically, we did not have to modify it for any of the things that we identified through our audit process. And I think Michelle mentioned we call it a clean opinion is a good way to refer to it. I think that's something that can resonate with most of us. So we've done a lot of work to get there, but we're very pleased to say that at the end of it, we're satisfied that this is materially accurate and we got to a clean opinion. On that internal control issue that I mentioned to you, so as a result of our work to look at how well those internal controls are designed, and in fact, is management following those, again, we have no issues that we're required to bring to your attention. So your folks are doing a very good job at identifying appropriate internal controls. They're designed effectively, and there weren't any significant weaknesses that we believe are important to bring to your attention. Another excellent result. On state legal compliance, so those state laws that I mentioned to you, so in all the areas that we tested, we did not identify any areas of non-compliance. And the unique thing about the state law testing is it's a pass-fail test. You could be out of compliance by a dollar, and I have to bring it to your attention. It's not like there's a materiality we can apply to that. But we've identified no areas of non-compliance. And you might recognize, and you've been a victim of this in the past, probably the most common type of non-compliance is an overexpenditure. Somewhere in the multitude of funds that you manage, somewhere we're going to slip up and a bill is going to come in at the end of the year, and we didn't adequately provide for it in the budget, and we have an overexpenditure. But this year you had zero funds that resulted in overexpenditures. So that's a pretty nice milestone for you. On the federal grants, so you received over $29 million, or I should say you spent over $29 million of federal grants this last year. And we actually tested over $89 million when you include some of the grants you've received in prior years are loaned out. So the value of the loan receivable on the books becomes a number we need to pay attention to. So the total breadth of grants that we looked at was over $89 million. We ended up testing three of the larger grants this year on a risk basis, the Homeland Security Grant, a Lead Hazard Reduction Grant, and your Home Investment Partnership Grant, which I think houses most of those loan programs. And within those, again, we did not have any findings of non-compliance that we're required to bring to your attention. That's also a nice milestone. You've had some instances of non-compliance in prior years, but no instances of non-compliance. You know, we also have to look at internal controls that you use that help you in meeting the compliance requirements on those grants. And if you have weaknesses in those, we need to tell you about it. We did not identify weaknesses in your internal controls over managing those grants. So that's another pretty phenomenal result. So, in addition to the reporting phase, we do have some required communications that we make to governing boards, and we've issued a letter. So you've already seen that. I don't know if you've had a chance to read it. It's not my intention to read it. There's probably 7 or 8 areas in there. But I thought I would hit on just a few that you might want to know about. For example, it's oftentimes that you want to know, geez, did we have any problems in the course of our audit? You know, are we asking questions and management is not being forthright or transparent? Or causing any problems for us, and we encountered no difficulties. So I think, as you can tell from Ken and Michelle, you know, no one likes to be audited, but I think they see the value in it and embrace it, and we've never experienced any particular difficulties in performing our work. Another area that boards want to know is, did we have any audit adjustments? So we came in, we did our work, and guess what? We found an error. And management needed to post some adjustments. And you can probably already tell, we didn't identify any errors that required management to post corrections. And in fact, sometimes we have to identify maybe smaller errors that are not material, but there weren't even smaller errors that were required to kind of report to you. Another area that our boards like to know is, did we have any disagreements with management? You know, maybe they don't like a particular accounting treatment. No one liked that pension liability when that had to be booked in its fullest intent. And I'm happy to report we had no disagreements with management about any technical issues or the application of our audit procedures. We've had some good-spirited discussions, which I would put in the healthy category, but nothing that I felt would be important to bring to your attention in terms of something that would not be good. So, a lot of work, and a pretty quick summary for a fantastic result to your audit, and hopefully, and I bet you can probably appreciate the amount of effort that goes into it in order to have that type of result. So I hope you feel good about this report from me and the result from your audit. And with that, I would just be available to answer questions that you may have.
Commissioner Fritz?
I'm just wondering about the mind of an auditor that's been working like this. That when you get to the end and it's all clean, do you think, oh my goodness, if I'd have looked a bit harder, I could have found that one thing? Or if you find the one thing, you're like, yes, I got it. I mean, just what goes through your mind as you're doing this due diligence?
You know, it's a mixed bag. Obviously, it takes a team of people. Just like Ken mentioned, you've got a team of very qualified people in the finance department. I have a very qualified team of individuals that it takes to do the audit work. We have some youngsters, they're trained to find errors. I mean, they're ready. You know, they want to glom on, and oftentimes in their angst to find an error, they may report something that really isn't an error. And we have to kind of calm them down and say, you know, nice effort. So, you know, part of it is that we want to encourage our people to really hang on and find those errors. And you feel good when you find one, in a sense, because that's what we're trained to do. So when we don't find one, it can be a mixed blessing.
Take them out for ice cream or something.
But the nice thing about it is it's almost like your doctor. You go into the doctor and you go there and you pick one who's very qualified, right? They do a thorough, and at the end you're hoping for that clean bill of health. And when you walk out, you feel good about it. I feel good when we can walk out and give our clients a clean bill of health. We know the level of effort we put them through to get there. And so it's a mixed blessing. Our staff maybe walk away a little disappointed. They didn't get their, you know, their error moment. But it feels really good to find folks that care about what they do, and they do a good job in the performance of their duties.
That's a really helpful analogy. Thank you.
I have a question. Just curious about your view of something. In the management's discussion in the CAFR, it says that in the first 6 months of 2017, inflation has risen 4.8%, which is pretty astonishing. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to be annualized over the course of the whole year, but obviously there's been an uptick in cost of living here. When we bill
Portlanders for utility services, we provide them with a combined bill. It's part water, part sewer stormwater. Water's about a third, sewer stormwater's about two-thirds. From your point of view, when you look at these numbers, is it fair for us to treat that as a combined bill and refer to the fact that combined and weighted, it's about a little over 4% in terms of cost, which would currently be below the rate of inflation?
Wow, that's a tough question. I don't know if I have a good answer for you. Obviously, those are related services. I don't know anyone, there aren't many people that provide water, I think, independent from stormwater services. So it doesn't surprise me that it's a combined bill or that you would look at a rate or rate increases together. And ultimately, it seems to me you ought to feel good about the comparative rate that you have compared to other utilities around you and how well you're doing and what's your trend line compared to others and how well you're managing the long-term sustainability of your capital assets and the repayment of your debt.
So I'm not trying to put you on the spot.
Sure.
And ask for, like, you know, as a certified auditor here, but we sometimes get some pushback when we send a combined bill. But the way we look at it is these are services that are folded in.
Mm-hmm.
It's one bill. And what people really want to know is, how's my bill going up? They don't actually calculate what's my water rate, my this, my that, weight it. They look, am I paying any more? And we've kept rate increases about just above 4%, which used to be above the rate of inflation. But I was really struck by the fact that the rate of inflation has spiked. And so we may be in an environment now where utilities, the annualized rate increases for utilities in terms of a combined bill is actually below the rate of inflation.
Yeah, that's surprising. That's probably an excellent place to be. And I would say that's probably unusual for a majority of our clients for that to be the case. I would say a majority of our clients are dealing with aging infrastructure, and bills are going up by much a pace larger than inflation because they're paying catch-up. Are playing catch up.
One other question. This is your what? How many years have you come before us?
Yeah, I think that we have bid on doing your audit three times, if I remember right, and have been successful in that bid process. And we're in the first year of the current contract.
So I think this would probably be the sixth year that we've had the financial audit presented.
So 6 years, and my recollection is in. Many years ago, you dinged us a couple of times on how we booked grants. And I think the lesson for me was that's complicated.
Yes.
How you book it, how you allocate it. And it was a couple of bureaus, PDC, Housing Bureau in particular, that you singled out. Does the absence of a finding about any problem with how we book grants generally, does that indicate that sort of the city folks who have to administer this now have a better understanding of what's required?
I would like to think so, and you're right. That's a very complicated area. You know, when you think about your utilities, you know when you're entitled to that revenue. You deliver service. You deliver some water. You're entitled to be paid for that. You know the timing of that. I deliver some water this month. I'm entitled to that revenue. When it comes to grants, those generally are not exchange transactions. A grantor agency is giving you dollars, which you go out and deploy. You might build an asset. You might provide service. The timing of that is different from the time that you might receive the check. And the accounting rules are complicated as to when you get to recognize that resource and when you recognize the revenue. And it's one of the most common areas that we see mistakes in financial statements is the timing of when do I recognize the resources and the revenue from those. You've done a good job of accounting for that. We have had some issues in the past, and we haven't had an issue in that regard for quite some time. So I would like to think that, yes, you've got some pretty smart people that really understand those accounting rules about when it's appropriate to recognize those resources.
Good. Thank you.
So I have a question, James. You heard the CAFR in the prior presentation,
yeah.
And the punchline for that was that expenses are growing more rapidly. than our revenue structure. And that was a concern. And the auditor notes in her letter to the council that you had also indicated in communications your concern about this, but you said it did not rise to a material level. At what point would it rise to a material level?
You know, I've really appreciated Ken's report to you. I think this is the third time I've heard this particular version or idea of presenting this information. And I would have to echo his comment. At the time that it would concern me is the point in which you're not able to meet these obligations when they become due. FPDNR, if you didn't have a dedicated property tax stream to pay that, you'd be in a world of hurt there. You've got a dedicated revenue stream. I would say I'm in agreement with Ken. Right now, you don't have an issue there. At the point in time, that if there's another property tax limitation measure, if all of a sudden you're subject to compression, if you've got a decline in the value of property here in Portland, that might be problematic, and I might amp up our level of discourse with you about that. I'm not worried about it as an auditor for some of the same reasons I think Ken is telling you he's not worried about it, because it feels like you're taking appropriate steps. You changed the plan in 2006. You put all the new members into Oregon PERS, which is funded on a current basis. So you'll work through this problem over time. The other thing is that you're receiving, I believe it's every 2 years, an evaluation of that property tax stream. So you're getting someone that's projecting out what's happening with property values and with property taxes, so that you're going to know in advance, or I'd like to think you're going to know in advance, if you start seeing trend lines that will be problematic, and hopefully you'll get that at enough time that you could take steps if necessary. I'd like to think that you've got enough information to be able to take some steps well in advance of an actual shortfall of cash to make those payments.
Great. Now I'm going to take you down one of my famous rabbit holes for a moment.
Okay.
You don't necessarily need to follow me. Commissioner Fish is responsible for utility bureaus, and there is a significant capital requirement to be able to keep those operational. I'm responsible for emergency responsiveness and resiliency bureaus. What do you guys do, and what happens to a community like Houston in the wake of a massive disruption to the property tax system? What happens?
Yeah, I don't know if I can answer that question, if I've experienced such a thing in my tenure. You know, in terms of the financial statement and an auditor's opinion on it, we have to look at the revenue streams. What's the cost of providing service? What are the revenues you have available? If there's a significant shortfall, what we're looking for is for management to adequately disclose those facts within this document. If they disclose the facts and are very transparent about it, you'd probably still get a clean opinion.
Do you guys have a specialized team that works in that arena that you could connect me with?
I probably can help you out with that.
I'd be curious, because as part of our overall resiliency plan, obviously fiscal resiliency is core to a lot of our bureaus, and that's an area where I personally would like some additional guidance.
Okay.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate that. Very good. I'll accept a motion. We have a motion from Commissioner Fish, a second from Commissioner Fritz. Any further questions, comments? Great report and presentation. Madam Auditor, last word, anything else?
Nope. We just wanted to provide you with that information.
Excellent. Please call the roll.
You, Daly.
Thank you for the report.
Fritz.
Thank you for your report and for making it understandable. And thanks especially for explaining the mind of an auditor, at least at times. Aye.
Fish.
Yeah, I really appreciate the report, and I appreciate that you alluded to a kind of a respectful but creative tension between your office and our team in sort of going through this process. So the goal is to get it right.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, that some of the things we used to get dinged for are not showing up with the same regularity is certainly a point of pride for those of us on this side. So thank you for your good work, sir. Aye.
Wheeler.
Great report, but that's because it's a clean report. I vote aye. Thank you. We appreciate that.